Hello everyone and welcome to another week of the Damage Report. I am your host, John Iadarola. No, you can't fact check that. I said it and I am him. For the week, I am John Iadarola. That's right. That's right. No, I'm the Damage Report's evil stepsister. I'm Francesca Fiorentini. Welcome. Hello. So good to see you. Thanks for being here. Hit that like button and that subscribe button if you haven't already, dragons. Yes, Dragon Daddy is out. He is writing a novel that is gonna make J.K. Rowling, you know, just disappear complete. Like who? Harry what? No, no. But I'm so happy to be here for the week. And with me for this fantastic Monday, I have the host of Hysteria Podcast and a contributor to The Daily Beast, Aaron Ryan. Aaron, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I love the evil stepsister characterization. I think that's perfect. Knowing you personally, I think it's just perfect.
Yeah, no, thank you. That means a lot, I think, coming from you. that you would think that about me. We have a lot of good stories to get to, Aaron, but I do want to just say that in John's honor, this is the moment where he usually reminds me of two shows that he likes and two, like, many comics that he likes better than me. So he'll always talk about John Oliver this moment, and he'll always talk about SNL. And his favorite SNL cast member is Cecily Strong. And Cecily Strong had an incredible performance on Saturday as Jeanine Pirro. Did you watch that at all?
No, I didn't watch it, but I saw a lot of people talking about how great it was. I can picture it. I think Cecily Strong is incredibly talented and super, super funny. And Jeanine Pirro is hilarious. That combination, I can't imagine it going wrong.
Just watch it. It involves her getting inside of a giant boxed wine and singing, "I did it my way." But I think she's saying, "I did it my wine." Like, it's so my wine. It's amazing. And Cecily Strong may be leaving the cast. So John, I'm sure, was pouring one out. And I'm sure we'll have to talk about it when he comes back. But are you ready to talk about the news this week or this morning?
I'm as ready as I'm ever gonna be.
Yeah, things aren't better. Fair warning, they're not necessarily better, but let's do it. So what exactly went down on January 6th? Who was involved? Who harbored insurrectionists? We should probably find all of those things out. And after passing a bill in the House to set up a 9/11 style commission, Democrats are now going to introduce that bill in the Senate. But of course, Republicans want nothing to do with this bill because they don't need a commission to know that January 6th was an inside job. But of course, top Republicans are making a concerted effort to quash the creation of a 9/11 style commission to investigate the Capitol attack, deeply endangering the bill's passage amid fears about what high profile inquiries into the events of January 6th might uncover. That includes Senate Majority or Shared Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, of course, who said that he is no longer in favor of this bill. He opposes the commission in its current form, and several Republicans who've previously expressed support said they could no longer back it. McConnell's opposition brings into sharp relief the treacherous path ahead for the legislation, which Senate Democrats could introduce as soon as this week, according to a source briefed on the matter. Aaron, is any of this surprising to you?
No, I think the most surprising aspect of this is how bored I am of this story of an armed insurrection in the US Capitol that, like, where people die. It is inherently not a boring story, right? But the Republican opposition to trying to find out what happened, I'm just sort of like, yeah, of course these clowns are doing this. Of course they're doing this. You know, it sort of reminds me of, like, you ever had a friend who found out that their partner was cheating on them? It's usually a her, by looking at their phone and found that it was, like, full of sex and inappropriate messages.
Full of sex.
And then the guy gets mad that she looked at the phone. Like that is somehow a comparable crime to having done all the things that are documented within the phone. That's how I feel like Republican obstruction to this registers to me. It's like, well, I guess if you're looking at the phone, you probably have to already have a sense of what's there. As we're investigating this, I think we have a sense that we'll uncover, we all kind of know what's there. We have a sense of what's there, but it would be great to know for sure what is there. And it's absolutely unsurprising to me. The Republicans are like, no, you can't look at my phone.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, kill the phone, shoot that phone. Never, phones are the problem in this case.
Phones don't exist. There's never been a phone. I don't know why you think I've ever had one. That's ridiculous. You must hate America if you think I have a phone in it with a bunch of insurrectionist sets.
First of all, I feel like they do get, I know the metaphor got away, but I'm like, I feel like they do kind of have like just sort of a like a Tinder, but for all the QAnon shamans that were in the Capitol and all the like Holocaust deniers, they're like, ooh, anyway, did I mention John was gone? This is how it's gonna be, people. All right, you just buckle up. Of course, this is making House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy look pretty bad, in particular because he was one of the guys who said that he called Trump during that insurrection. So House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy could be left exposed should a 9/11 style commission be impaneled. McCarthy called Trump as rioters breached the Capitol and begged them to call them off, only for the former president to side with the rioters, saying they appeared to care more about overturning the election results than Republicans in Congress. And that's not only Kevin McCarthy, but of course Mitch McConnell. The day after voting to not impeach Donald Trump for the second time, got up there and grandstanded all about like, oh, the rioters and the overturning of democracy and Aaron, am I crazy in feeling like somehow if we had done this back in like February, you know, right after Biden was inaugurated, that this would have easily been passed? Whereas now we're like, oh no, I don't know if 10 Republican senators are actually gonna vote for this.
Yeah, I think it would have easily in February, but also if it would have happened in February, Republicans would have had more of a moral leg to stand on because they would have been like, look, they're prioritizing this over COVID relief, which in February was like an urgent need that hadn't been passed yet, like the giant first thing the Biden administration actually got through that needed to happen. So it was sort of like doing it now means that Republicans don't really have an excuse to say like, why aren't you doing something else? Also, they have no clear agenda. I haven't seen a single policy proposal from them except not what the Democrats want, which isn't really a policy as much as it's just a disagreement. So yeah, I think that like the sentiment would have been there, but they would have also had a more readily available excuse.
Absolutely. And for a party that like prides itself on somehow the dwindling masculinity of the American male, and you know, Ted Cruz tweeting out Russian like, you know, military training videos and comparing them to supposedly like super effeminate, you know, American military propaganda, that like the one person who just emasculates them over and over and over again is Donald Trump. Just for the whole world to see. Yes, I sicked an entire mob on you. Yes, they were screaming, hang Mike Pence. Yes, if they probably found you or Mitch McConnell, they would have hurt you. But once again, deny reality and I'm gonna just completely emasculate you. Bow down, you know, reality is not reality.
I mean, it almost seems like something that they like at this point. Like it's something that they're into. That they really like, maybe inappropriately so. another aspect of that is like, you know, here's something that is a little bit of a tangent, but COVID has a clear link to causing erectile dysfunction. Yes. And a lot of men that are Republicans refuse to wear masks and refuse to get the vaccine as some display of masculinity that could lead to them literally losing a very key component of their masculinity. It's a strange time.
Wow, God. Well, Rand Paul is refusing to be vaccinated. We may get to that story, but yes, that's what we need on the right. More erectile dysfunction. Hey, the future is bright. All right, well, let's turn to a different aspect about this. Capitol Police are calling Republicans out for their reticence to not establish a 9/11 commission investigating what actually happened on January 6th. An anonymous group of about 40 to 50 wrote a letter that was obtained by CBS claiming that Capitol Police officers condemning the Republican congressional leaders for their lack of support for a commission that would investigate the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. Somehow that's right. Somewhere in there, Francesca got through that. The letter said, quote, "It is inconceivable that some of the members we protect would downplay the events of January 6th." And apparently, right now, Capitol Police are having a hard time recruiting. They're like understaffed by something like more than 200 positions. And it's not hard to imagine why. Of course, that letter, anonymously released, not necessarily representative of the Capitol Police itself, just anonymous group of 40 to 50 within the Capitol Police Department, completely misconstrued by right-wing figures like America's favorite Klansman, Tucker Carlson. Tucker, of course, saw that letter and was like, nope, blue lives don't matter. Take a look.
Department was a law enforcement agency. Members of Congress certainly believe that. They trust their lives to the Capitol Hill Police. And that's why Capitol Hill Police don't lobby Congress. That would be a dangerous conflict of interest backed by an implied threat. Do what we say or watch your back. In this case, that's exactly what they were saying to Republicans. Quote, "We, members of the United States Capitol Hill Police, write this letter to express our profound disappointment with the recent comments from both chambers' minority leaders, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, expressing no need for a January 6th commission. We are expected to remain neutral and do our jobs with honor and integrity," the letter continued. "It is unfortunate that our bosses, Congress, are not held to the same standard that we, the USCP, are." Well, that's a ransom note. Imagine getting it from one of your own bodyguards. It might be enough to make you rethink your position, which is, of course, the point of it. The Capitol Police are now effectively an armed political action committee. So you've got to ask, what other partisan demands will they make in the future? Do Capitol Police have strong views on voter ID laws? How about taxpayer-funded abortion or our next trade deal with China?
Yes, if there was one armed political action committee on January 6th, it was definitely the Capitol Police. No other militias present at that moment. Aaron, thoughts on that gymnastics of a take?
You know that Regina George meme from Mean Girls where she goes, so you agree, you think you're really pretty. Tucker, so you agree, you think the police are an arm of a political agenda that's got weapons and it tries to enforce a specific worldview. Oh, so you agree, Tucker? Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, in this case, he's like had me in the first half, because he's absolutely right that the police in many cases are, they have a political ideology and an agenda, but not in this case. I think that it's totally fair for people who are workers to expect a safe workplace. And I think it's really, I don't want to engage with the entire, I guess, like cloud burst of dumb stuff that Tucker just said, because, you know, courts have ruled that Tucker Carlson is not someone who delivers the news. That is like been a court ruling. It's not news, it's entertainment. So I think that part of this is trying to be like nose tweaking. But on the other hand, it's just like, man, I guess maybe the police shouldn't have an agenda at all if you don't want them to sometimes have an agenda that doesn't line up with your own.
You know? That's exactly right. I mean, that's what I'm saying about the Blue Lives Matter stuff is like I wish we could mash up anytime anyone talks about January 6th, tries to downplay it, just roll B roll of a police officer being smashed in a doorway, you know, or being pummeled with an American flag. Like, again, the bloodbath, if those were BLM demonstrators, if they were pussy-hatted, you know, women at the Women's March who tried to do that, just pussy hats everywhere, nothing but yarn. I'm sorry, but it's like I keep thinking, I've demonstrated so many times in DC that I'm like, man, we wouldn't get far. But so once again, we're being told not to believe our eyes. You see footage here of, again, a Capitol Police officer leading an entire mob And we've seen the footage within seconds of accosting and being right in the face of senators and congresspeople. This is their, what they had have, you know, this is what they've sowed, right? This is everything they've sown, and it came knocking at their door. And yet now they're like, nope, didn't even happen. I can't even see it. And blue lives don't actually matter if they don't uphold my worldview. So, but exactly right. Tucker is basically revealing that, yeah, no, police do have a lot of power. I guess not the ones in the Capitol. Those folks who, by the way, remember that the Capitol Police, look, I don't think the Capitol Police operate in the same way that you know, the St. Louis police force does. Like, let's just sort of a little bit separate that. Mm-hmm. And also the Capitol Police has had multiple complaints of mistreatment of certain things like racism, microaggressions or macroaggressions, right? Feeling unsafe in their workplace had been a thing. This is not the first time. Obviously, this is a accumulation and a culmination of a lot of that. But I'm just astounded that they, if anyone on the left said this about police officers, of course they would be dragged through the mud for it, but it's Tucker.
Yeah, you know, I also think that this kind of is an extension of a worldview that I've seen expressed by a lot of people on the right now, which is kind of like, I'm the only one who matters and everyone else is essentially the help. Like, people who you just get a sense are terrible to wait staff. But that attitude just extended to everyone else in the world. The police are there to be my personal security guards, Like, the people who are the teachers are there to be my kids' babysitters. Like, nurses are there to take on all of the risk of COVID-19 that I choose through my stupidity. Like, every single group of workers that's like public facing, service facing, are treated as though they owe this specific class of people their their allegiance. And you know, they're the ones there to do the bidding. They're the customer. The customer is always right. And it's just, it's a bad look, a bad personality.
Yeah, they're not your Robin. Like, they're not gonna, I guess they have to take a bullet. Do they have to take a bullet for Congress people? That should be, let's look into that. I'm very curious, because
I mean, part of the job if you're a police officer is that you expose yourself to a certain amount of risk. But sure. I think that it should also be something that we try to make the risk that they're exposed to something that's not going to be lethal and something that isn't, like, we don't want to expose people to unnecessary risk. And what happened on January 6th was clearly unnecessary and clearly couldn't have happened without the help of people who either looked the other way or did a terrible job or planned it poorly or didn't take whatever was happening seriously. I mean, all of this stuff was posted online in advance. I just think we need to put it together. And Tucker Carlson is just,
we need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Too much distraction. He's like 10 pounds of distraction in a 5-pound bag when it comes to this.
I love that. Well, let's move on to just a little bit of another aspect on this, because more has come out, even if there isn't a commission established. For those who thought that, like, maybe January 6th was it, you know, like maybe all these militias and like boat dads and QAnon moms just came and they got their little insurrectionist yayas out and now they're moving on. Turns out, sadly, that is not the case. Washington's Metropolitan Police Department has recorded threats to lawmakers and public facilities in the wake of the January 6th attack on the Capitol, according to documents made public in a ransomware hack on their systems this month. So the police documents were stolen and published by a ransomware attack group, Babouk. And some were redistributed by the transparency organization Distributed Denial of Secrets to various outlets last week, publishing stories based on the data that show intelligence indicating that far right boogaloo groups plan to attack various targets in the Capitol. So a January 22nd bulletin mentions that in Pennsylvania, a man was arrested after transmitting interstate threats to multiple US senators of the Democratic Party, having stated that he was, quote, going to DC to kill people and wanted to be killed by police. Almost a month later, a bulletin reported that, quote, an identified militia group member in Texas was claiming that if their operation failed at the US Capitol, there was a so-called backup plan involving the group detonating bombs at the US Capitol during the State of the Union. Okay, I guess that's why the State of the Union was just, well, that was the inauguration. Did we have a State of the Union? Maybe that's why we didn't have a State of the Union, Aaron.
He gave that speech where he talked about his like rollout of the infrastructure plan that was a kind of about the American Families Plan, but also about a bunch more stuff. And it was kind of sparsely attended. It was like a school board meeting at the very end of the year when there's like nothing on the agenda, and everyone was wearing that. It had a really like weird vibe to it, but it was an informational speech as far as presidential addresses go, because it gave information about policy goals, which was good. But it wasn't a State of the Union, and it didn't have the pomp that it normally does.
You know, one of the things that apparently is being done, and this was sort of a lot of folks' critique from the beginning, is that after January 6th, this is going to be an excuse to completely beef up security. Now we know apparently Capitol Police is having a hiring problem because the workplace, not exactly the best conditions. But, you know, supposedly the architect of the Capitol, I don't know who this is, like, are they still alive? It's somebody, but basically someone's being given a giant contract to sort of assess the security risks and, you know, how much more of a fortress can we make the Capitol building, et cetera, et cetera. But like, the response is always going to be in this country, sadly, more militarization, more police, more barricades, more separation, definitely a crackdown on mostly progressive and left protesters, which happens all the time, every time there's sort of a new attempt to create security protocols and any new policy that always comes down on the backs of progressive folks. And in this case, you're like, these are militias continuing to plan. They probably saw January 6th. Sure, they didn't overturn a Democratic election, but honestly, they probably saw it as a success, considering how far they got, and considering that now Republicans aren't really turning their backs on them. They're essentially saying, no, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Should have happened. Yeah. We were trying to do the same thing through, you know, parliamentary rules inside. So yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, any extra security barricades erected around the US Capitol as a result of January 6th, any increased militarization, is essentially a monument to what happened on the 6th, which for better or for worse, you know, that's, if we're going to increase the militarization of the area around the Capitol, that sucks. I also think that this will be used as an excuse for members of Congress to avoid situations that annoy them. They should absolutely be protected from situations that endanger them. But I think part of being an elected official is, look, you gotta talk to your constituents, especially if they're, you know, not happy with the work that you're doing and they want to engage you on the work. So I think that I'm worried that some of this will be used, like you implied, to protect members of Congress from ever really having to deal with people that are like, hey, what are you doing? We elected you and this is a priority for me. So I really hope that if there is an increased militarization or police presence around the Capitol to protect against these clearly ongoing threats that are coming from the right, I hope that there is a plan to eventually step it down once it seems like this threat is starting to diminish, because I believe that public interaction with elected officials is a really important part of the process. Mm-hmm. And I also think that a lot of our elected officials are completely poisoned by social media, because they spend so much time holed up, like looking at their mentions on Twitter. They think that that's real life. And to an extent, it sort of is, except journalists are way overrepresented, or represented, bots are way overrepresented. Angry people are way overrepresented.
Comedians, which are both bots and angry people at the same time.
Exactly, and sometimes they're Russian also. And they're often dissatisfied with the status quo, but it's more a reflection of them than what's going on. But regardless, I think that the more people that are elected officials are separated from the people they're elected to represent, the more they retreat into this kind of world of siloed off internet fantasy of what's going on. And they think Facebook is real, so they have to govern for the Facebook people. Or they think that, that Instagram stories from like anti-vax moms are the real thing, and they have to start taking those people into consideration. I think that it's very important that in considering the security of officials, it's prioritized that real people and Congress people still interact with each other.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's also like, you can't just yell into the mail slot of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative AOC. Like, you can make an appointment, you can deliver a petition, you can peacefully discuss issues with your elected officials. And that should be the avenue, but you're totally right. It's like, ironically, they're becoming sort of these QAnon moms that they were like almost, attacked by on January 6th. Now they're sort of, further isolating themselves. And I didn't even think about that, but I think you're absolutely right. I'm curious, like, there's been a lot of language around, we need a new like war on terror, but for right wing extremism. And there's a very small percentage of my brain that's like, well, good, because they're actually terrorists. And there's also the larger percent is like, well, you guff that one up real bad. The war on terror was a failure, and you locked up innocent people and detained people and tortured people. And you ran all kinds of sting operations, the FBI did. Don't do that part. Don't do all the stuff where you like create the threat, because there's threats clearly on the right. Don't like send in, some undercover to then create another, like to plant a bomb and do all the effed up stuff that you did when it came to Muslim extremism. Mm-hmm.
And right wing extremism. A lot of stuff in like the 80s and 90s was just right wing groups trying to bait the government into a violent confrontation. And then that violent confrontation, Ruby Ridge, became fodder for people like Timothy McVeigh. That's part of the plan, is to get into a fight with government forces, to make them seem like they're being oppressed, to make the point that the government is violently quashing their quote unquote rights. Yeah. And government overstep happens a lot of times when you involve the military, like you were mentioning with the war on terror, but it definitely happens stateside too. When they've tried to fight extremism within our own borders, it hasn't gone great when they've resorted to typical police and militarized force.
Absolutely. Okay, so one final aspect of this, and then we'll wrap this Jan 6 discussion up. Because some people are taking precautions when it comes to stopping further insurrections. Whether or not Congress is preparing to prevent another attack on the Capitol, private businesses are, particularly hotels, and particularly one hotel, the Trump Hotel. That's right. Police intelligence documents show that Washington's Trump Hotel raised its rates as a security tactic in the hope of deterring Trump supporting QAnon supporters from staying there in early March, on a day which some believed would see Trump restored to office. Forbes reported in February that the Trump International Hotel in Washington raised its rates to 180% of the normal seasonal charge for the 3rd and 4th of March this year. That was apparently the date where, Jesus was coming back, or like riding a dinosaur, I don't know. Some Epstein was going to be there. I don't know who was going to be there, but someone was coming back and Trump was going to be back in the office. But even the Trump Hotel is like, we don't want those crazies. We know them very well.
You know, there's a part of me that thinks though, like maybe they raise their rates as a way to increase sales, because I think Donald Trump is the type of person who thinks that something is better if it's more expensive, rather than thinking that he shouldn't get it if it's more expensive, like I'll just go for the cheaper thing. Yeah. So I wonder if he's trying to appeal to like the sort of McMansion hillbillies who think that, you know, the most expensive thing is the best thing. Like, do you remember that cabinet official that ended up resigning after we found out all this stuff about what a grifter he was? I think it was maybe Tom Price, former HHS secretary. And one of the things that he asked his assistant to do was drive around and get lotion from the Ritz-Carlton, because he thought that the Ritz-Carlton had like the fanciest lotion. I feel like that sort of a person is the type of person that would maybe be more attracted to the Trump Hotel on this marquee crazy date, because they're like, ooh, look how expensive it is. It must be in high demand. Ergo, as a fancy person, I will be staying there.
Totally.
I mean, I'm not an economist, but that's just one possibility.
To be fair though, that makes way more sense to me than the Trump Hotel going, no, for security purposes, we need to make sure that these folks aren't near DC and in our hotel. No.
No.
They're like, no, we know that they're gonna be here, so we're raising our rates because we wanna charge them more. They just, they're not gonna admit that to the Guardian.
Right, like, do you remember that? We talked about Cecily Strong earlier in this episode.
Yeah.
Do you remember when she had that character that was like luxury? And like she sort of, it's like that, you know, person who, it's a person that's like a hillbilly's idea of like a rich person's taste. And also, you know, I think that it also feeds into this idea that the people that came to DC on January 6th were somehow like low income, no shirts under overalls, wearing one piece of straw coming out of their mouth type people, instead of people that could afford to take time off work and fly across the country and stay in a hotel for several days. These people are not necessarily like low income people. These people can afford to do this. Like, these people are speedboat salesmen. These people own a chain of Skidoo dealerships. These people, you know, these people are realtors in the greater Dallas area. These people are not like, I think that furthering the stereotype that they're somehow like poor, and I'm using like hearty air quotes here, white trash. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, yes, I believe that they are trash, but the like low income aspect of it's not something that I think bears out.
They are trash. They might be white, but not necessarily those two things together. I get you.
Right, exactly.
No, it's exactly the you know, in my hometown, a woman who like has a candy store closed it, and like we're talking like it, like she's a business owner. You know what I mean? Like these are people who can take a week off, get a private jet, go to DC, like stay at the Trump Hotel. She's a candy store, isn't it? I mean, never gonna buy that. But very, very sad. Very sad.
You know what? I don't need the Timothy Chalamet biopic like prequel of Willy Wonka's life that just got announced. I need a story about how this woman's candy store situation came to be. Like, how are you evil and own a candy store?
I mean, look, sugar is a drug. At the end of the day, it's not good. Not good for the brain. I don't know.
True.
Look, if it was like a Belgian fry shop, I'm much more a savory person. If it was like a Belgian fry shop, I'd be like, you leave her alone. She had a right to be there. Don't ever cancel her Belgian fry shop. I love it. In the world of anti-maskers, one anti-masker rises above the others. The Karen of all Karens with three Ks, Marjorie Taylor Greene, or Marjorie Greene for this show. And she has outdone herself once again, because she is like the LeBron of saying outrageous things. She's just competing with herself, you know, every week, new record. And now she recently went on a conservative talk show to compare wearing a mask, which she is refusing to do on the House floor, to, yes, you guessed it, the Holocaust. Take a look.
You know, we can look back in a time in history where people were told to wear a gold star, and they were definitely treated like second-class citizens, so much so that they were put in trains and taken to gas chambers in Nazi Germany. And this is exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about.
Okay, so obviously a little bit of an apples to oranges situation there, Marge. I'm just gonna, you know, call you in versus calling you out. Obviously, many people are rightfully outraged by this statement. I think we had the Jewish space lasers. I think this is a bridge too far, Aaron.
This sort of reminded me of this and a couple other stories. Really drives home the point that I don't think a lot of Republicans read anything after high school. In that the Holocaust is the only bad thing she can think of to compare this to. It's like, look, giving you the benefit of the doubt, Marge, you want to compare this to something historically bad that happened? You might want to know about any other historically bad thing, because you could compare it to another thing, you know, besides the Holocaust. You can compare it to something that isn't a genocide. Like, you don't need to refer to the Holocaust. I feel like the same sort of thing happens when you see I think last week a Wyoming candidate for the House of Representatives compared himself to Romeo and Juliet because of a relationship he had when he was 18 with a 14-year-old girl. It's like, have you read a book since high school? Please read something else. Like, I'm so tired of this, like, complete. But you know, Marge Greene, second thing, I don't think, coming from where she comes from and just given her overall personality, I can't picture her having many friends who are Jewish that could have been like, please do not with this, Marge. This all seems very, it was just really ill-advised. A thing that I remind myself of though, when she kind of gets in public and once again achieves her goal of getting attention, because that seems to be her only goal. Just congratulations, Marjorie, you got attention.
Yes.
She has so little power in Congress. She has less power than a high-level staffer for Nancy Pelosi. You know, she's an elected official, and she has messed up and messed around so much, and she's been stripped of all of her committee assignments. And all she does now is go on talk shows and try to get attention for herself. So, I mean, this is a very, very stupid comment, and it's a reflection of a deep ignorance of history and a deep lack of creativity. But it's also a reflection of how little power she has and how little say she has over anything. She might as well just be the most important Facebook mom in America, because she's about as like the most important Facebook mom in America who doesn't really have any power in Congress.
A MIFA, most important Facebook MIFM, you know. That definitely not a MILF, just a MIFM, most important Facebook mom. I like that. First of all, I do think that you see this. This is sort of the natural progression of what a lot of anti-maskers have been saying for a while now. Some of my favorite Karen videos out there are ones where they compare what they're going through, which, by the way, is being asked to wear a mask for 5 minutes while they order their Chipotle burrito. They compare that to the civil rights struggle, that this is my right as an American citizen, and my civil rights, specifically that phraseology, are being trampled right now. One Karen called 911 and was like, yeah, hello? My civil rights are being trampled, which is amazing. Like, cause like, it also means that you think that like black people just call 911 like because some racism is happening. Like, you know what I mean?
One to be like, hey, yeah, make it go viral on the blog.
yeah, if only, right? If only, and said no. Oftentimes people will say far away from calling the police on in any circumstance. But of course, if she didn't know that her statements are ridiculous and wrong, here's a tweet from the American Jewish Congress. You can never compare health-related restrictions with yellow stars, gas chambers, and other Nazi atrocities. Such comparisons demean the Holocaust and contaminate American political speech. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene must immediately retract and apologize. I don't feel like that's going to happen. No. That's just me.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think as she kind of amasses enemies across the political spectrum, because it's like if she wasn't out there saying things like this over and over again, a lot of people wouldn't even know who she was. But you know, every time she speaks up, she is making her already self-selected group of followers and cheerleaders feel great. But yeah, she's maxed out with them. Like, I don't think increasing Marjorie Greene awareness is going to like make her more beloved. I think that she is like at saturation point. She's like the she's like the NFL of being an unhinged Facebook mom. You know, like everyone knows, everybody who is going to like her knows about her. But there are people that don't understand the specific ways in which they should dislike her that are learning about it, you know? And so I feel like when she runs for re-election, she is going to be up against a lot of normally disparate groups that are united in being like, get this lady out of here.
Yeah.
Tired of her talking. Why we want there to be no reason for her to be on TV. That's the America I want to live in, where we can all unite to get her off TV.
I think it's agreed. I don't even like doing Marjorie Greene stories, but I do think that like sometimes, you know, it's like every day there's one. And you gotta be like, all right, let's do Mondays and Wednesdays. And then, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, we'll give her a rest. Cause she's continuing to say crazy stuff. And it's sort of this like test, like with Trump, the more negative press only inflated him, but he was obviously already a celebrity. Can you like, does negative attention inflate someone and sort of gas them, as it were, into more prominence? It doesn't seem like it's really working out with Marjorie Greene. And of course, I just want to let you guys know, she didn't apologize for the comments. She doubled down. She later defended her comments to CNN affiliate KPNX, saying, I stand by all of my statements. I said nothing wrong. I think, here we go, any rational Jewish person didn't like what happened in Nazi Germany. Oh, you think they didn't? They might not have liked it. And any rational Jewish person doesn't like what's happening with overbearing mask mandates and overbearing vaccine policies. Ergo, if you guys didn't get that, if you're Jewish, you should be an anti-maxer, masker. See how she just worked that in?
I just look, she's not gonna learn. She's not a person who is going to learn anything from anybody saying anything. But it does feel like kind of cathartic for us to get our yayas out and be like, here's all the ways in which this is wrong. It really is mind-boggling how little a grasp she has on how metaphors work or comparisons at all. Like the Holocaust was a historical, you know, moment designed to exterminate people.
Yeah.
Mask wearing is a health policy designed to save people. So in a way, opposite. But yeah, I mean, look, we're just kind of like shouting at a brick wall when it comes to people like her. But I do think it's cool that she's eclipsing all of these other kind of also ran people in Congress who really want like bad attention, like crazy Colorado gun lady. We don't hear very much about her, because no matter how hard she tries, Marjorie Greene is out there outdoing her. You know, and we
crazy
have
Colorado gum lady.
Gun lady.
Oh, gun lady. Oh, yeah. Boebert?
Guns in the, yeah, Lobo. We're calling her Lobo.
That's a Lobo. Well, okay, so just one final thing on Marjorie's talking about this. Well, not final thing. Second to last, she has been fined. She will be fined if she continues to not wear a mask. First of all, she's been nose cocking the whole time, right? She's like just wearing her mask to here, and it always says something like, you know, Trump won, or, you know, Ilhan Omar is terrible, whatever it says, you know, like socialism. But she was sent a letter by Nancy Pelosi saying, pursuant to House Resolution 38, you were observed not wearing a mask on the floor of the House on May 18th, 2021. You were then asked by a member of my staff to wear a mask while in the Hall of the House of Representatives, unless recognized to speak by the chair. The letter said, the letter is to inform you that a further violation of the House Resolution 38 will result in a $500 fine for your next violation and a $2,500 fine for any subsequent violation. Girl, just do it. Just keep on not wearing a mask. Let it pile up like parking tickets on a rundown car that will not start. That is you, lady. Like, that is you.
Nancy Pelosi, if she were a masterful troll, and I don't think Nancy Pelosi is an unintelligent woman, I think she's very smart, she would take those fines and start an unofficial fund that donated every fine that was paid into the fund to a specific cause that Marjorie Greene dislikes. I can, you know, BLM related causes, police reform causes. I can see like abortion funds. The South, you know, is we're facing a really important battle when it comes to abortion. Yellowhammer Fund.
Yes.
Give all of her not masking. Let's give it. Let's troll for good, Nancy. This is my appeal to you, Speaker. Let's troll for good with her. And also another thing, though, on a serious note. Actually, I was pretty serious about the last thing. She should donate her fines to like some amazing liberal leftist cause. People like Marge Green are making it worse for literally everyone else. Because the longer she digs her heels in on stuff like this, the longer Nancy Pelosi needs to keep the rule in place and not appear to be capitulating to people like Marge Green. Like if everybody could just come correct, you know, once they got to a point where they were comfortable with the vaccination levels of members of Congress, it would be easier to justify removing the mask requirements. But yeah, it's like politically difficult now because of people like Marge Green, you know, nose cocking, as you said.
Also the CDC, super not helping. They're very confusing, very conflicting. Well, let's go to another take on this. In the wake of Marjorie Taylor Greene's comments comparing mask wearing to the Holocaust, you might be wondering, who's got like just the worst take on this? Who's got like a terrible analysis? And if you thought Meghan McCain, you'd be right. Yes, the commentator, My Little Pony, Meghan McCain, took to The View and as always, had a terrible view.
I would love if the energy that is being put on one crazy woman in Congress, and by the way, if she is the face of the Republicans, then the squad is the face of the Democrats. I would love Democrats to put that same type of energy onto what's happening on the left, because quite frankly, this is how people get red-pilled. They're red-pilled when they see the blatant bias in the media. It's because the media doesn't want the squad to look bad. They just want Marjorie Taylor to look bad. Anti-Semitism is a huge problem everywhere in this country. When you talk about Holocaust survivors,
yes, it is.
My producer who produces me every day, grandparents.
We're going to break, and when we come back, you can continue talking, but now we're going to break, so we'll be right back. I'm cutting you off because we have to go, Megan.
Yes, forever will be. We gotta go.
Oh my God.
That's how television works.
Look, doing TV is hard. It's not easy. Sometimes you say things that come out not quite in the order or that you want to say those things. And sometimes your thoughts get a little disorganized between your brain and your mouth. And so giving her the benefit of the doubt, that was really incoherent. I'm not sure what the point was. I think at best, it was kind of trying to tie defense of Marjorie Taylor Greene to her really, really staunchly pro-Zionist Israel views, but I don't know what that meant. I don't know what that meant.
Well, Meghan McCain is, I think, a sort of female Tucker Carlson in that she will never come out and say what she actually means. She just sort of shadow boxes and tertiates and whataboutisms until she's not saying anything. She's just saying everyone's bad. And what she loves to do, instead of following her own advice and calling out her own party, she loves to say that Democrats are not calling out their party. And she's willing to call out her own party, but not until the other side does the same, which for just like on a base level is not how anti-Semitism works or should work. If no matter who says anything, you should obviously call it out. Now here's the difference. Ilhan Omar, who said something like, when it comes to the Israeli lobby, it's all about the Benjamins, was called out supposedly for using a trope about Jews and money. Now, She was actually just talking about the lobby. Well, lobbyists use money, so I'm not sure how else she could have said it. Look, she apologized for those remarks. She said she was not aware that there was this trope, that she did not mean anything by it. And the reason that she apologized was because Nancy Pelosi, her own party leader, said she had to and called her out and in fact created a whole commission about hate speech because of Ilhan Omar's twisted comments about a very real thing, which is the big influence of AIPAC and the Israeli lobby. Mm-hmm. So obviously, and you know, Meghan McCain is trying to make this about anti-Semitism. She talks about all the attacks, which are awful. Like, and I do think it's good to name the amount of attacks and to also not conflate them with being for Palestinian human rights. Let's not do that either. Let's not play that game, because that's not reality either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the red pill point was the most incoherent point. Like, yes, that's how people get red pilled. Like, wait, explain that to me more slowly. So you're saying because people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who make incredibly insensitive and ridiculous comparisons between a public health measure and a mass extermination attempt against Jewish people, because of the coverage of that, other people will watch it and say, I don't like Jews either. Like, what? I don't understand the connection there.
Like, No. That is the correct understanding, because usually when someone is red pilled, it means they're like lurking around message boards and 4chan, 8chan, whatever, and like sharing Holocaust memes. She's trying to use it as a, this is how people sort of become radicalized and woke to the fact that like, the other side is somehow, she misunderstands what red pilling actually is.
Oh, what it looks like. Oh, yeah,
she has no idea.
I mean, here would be an example of a time that I think coverage could make people feel sympathetic to a person that was like conservative. Like, do you remember when Amy Coney Barrett was in the process of being confirmed to the Supreme Court? If there had been like really unfair coverage or like crappy, mean-spirited coverage about her adopted children on the left, mm-hmm, that would have been like, whoa, what are you guys doing? That's like so mean-spirited and so beside the point of like her, you know, as a person, as a judge. And that's just, that's awful. And that could turn people off. But I don't see how coverage of things that Marjorie Taylor Greene said and then refused to apologize for. Like you pointed out, that Representative Omar apologized after she made a comment that was insensitive to stereotypes in the way that it could be read. And she apologized. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is like, no, I'm not sorry. And yeah, I'd do it again. So it's like, it's just not a comparable situation. And I just think that, and it's also just very bad faith. Democrats are constantly policing each other. And some people would argue that they waste a ton of energy doing that, because they waste a ton of energy policing each other at the behest of bad faith attacks from the right. Yes. Meanwhile, people on the right are not policing themselves. Like, you know, we've never heard of, you know, Kevin McCarthy hasn't had a serious conversation with Representative Greene. And I just think it's all, we can't keep falling for this. We can't keep pretending like this is the truth, because it's not even playing in the sandbox adjacent to truth. It's in a different playground.
I love that. And that's exactly that. You're so, so right. We like, again, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. We are constantly fighting against the right that is using sort of left talking points and progressive talking points, even woke talking points, right, as they call it, against the left and against Democrats. Being like, well, why don't you subscribe to, you know, feminist standards and principles? And what about my body, my choice? And you're like, you're not for choice. Like, you laud and herald your sexual abusers. Like, you know what I mean? We like oust them, you know, within a moment's notice. Maybe that we shouldn't do that. But like, it's just, so again, it's like, what are we actually talking about here? They're playing by a different set of rules, but they're constantly looking at our rule book and being like, well, how come, you know, you're like,
yeah, they don't play by any rules, but because we have principles, when we don't play by them, we are called out and hounded until we, you know, do enough like self-flagellation to satisfy them. And it's really not even, it doesn't really accomplish anything except wasting our energy. And there are some times when people on the left should examine themselves and apologize for things. But we shouldn't do it because people on the right are calling us out.
Absolutely. Hello, AP, and you firing a young journalist for her previous activism around Palestine. Okay, that was a right wing hit job. All right, I digress. Let's move into our last, I don't know if our last story. We're in an E block, guys. What does that mean to you? Does that mean anything to you? You like the E block? Okay, here we go. I'm sorry. I'm moving on. All right, well, hear no racism, see no racism, learn no racism. Republicans in the Texas House just passed a bill that would ban teachers from teaching about racism or white supremacy. So I guess that throws like the majority of American history out. It's just gonna be a, it'll just be recess. It'll just be recess. Republicans in the Texas House passed this bill Tuesday. The bill is being fast-tracked to Republican Governor Greg Abbott to sign into law and states that social studies and civics teachers aren't allowed to discuss the concept that, quote, one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex, or the idea that an individual, by virtue of the individual's race or sex, bears responsibility for actions committed in the past by other members of the same race or sex. It also states that social studies and civics teachers may not be compelled to discuss current events or widely debated and currently controversial issues of public policy or social affairs as part of the course. One more piece on this, it goes on to say that teachers don't have to take any professional training like cultural proficiency and equity training if it makes them feel any, quote, discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress because of their race or gender. My God, you guys, if white fragility was turned into a bill and enshrined into law, that's this. You're fragile, you don't want to hear about racism? There you go.
It's sort of like, remember when I was like in my 20s and very, very irresponsible with money, after a big weekend, I would just not look at my bank account balance and be like, I'm just not, I just don't want to know about this. And I feel like we're doing that, but like with American history, you're still broke. We are still broke, guys. And also, you know, it always amuses me when lawmakers think they can somehow keep young people from obtaining information. They know a lot more about how to find index, like research information, than you've forgotten in your life, Greg Abbott. These people are digital natives. Like these people can find out things that adults are trying to hide from them. And you know, I think that if Texas is, if this like becomes just part of Texas's educational system, people are either gonna learn their history from TikTok, because there are plenty of people on TikTok giving slightly wrong lessons about history, maybe from a different perspective, or they're gonna be made of, they're going to be made fun of when they write college essays. Texas students are going to be applying for schools, and those college admissions essays are gonna be handed around the Harvard office, and people will laugh at them because they are going to be such little summer children. It's just
summer children.
Little summer children. It's just setting up an entire state's worth of students to have a rude awakening once they get to college.
Absolutely. And this is, the whole thing is tiptoeing around the idea of racism, right? It's not that, obviously, the bill's language apparently makes it seem like, you know, we shouldn't teach that one race or gender is superior to the other. Like, obviously we shouldn't teach that. But even discussing that throughout history and currently and baked into systems of policing and education and housing, it is very clear that certain groups of people are treated very differently than others, that inherently is racism. And like, that is mind-boggling. And this is all, of course, about critical race theory, which is the newest thing. Apparently critical race theory is like the devil and it's poisoning children's minds, because looking at race critically is bad. You have to look at race uncritically, you know? You know, Asian people drive like this, black people eat this stuff, Indian food is like, that's what we want. We want basic race theory. We want like 90s problematic white comic race theory. Like we want the most basic stuff. And it's so true. Look, young people, how many times have you seen that white guy just explain like that reverse racism isn't a thing, you know, like on TikTok? Like young people share TikTok videos and they're like, oh man, I just got a whole like semester of critical race theory in this TikTok. And you're like, good on you. I mean, not actual reading, but cool to start.
Mm-hmm. Bullet points, you get some bullet points.
Yeah, totally. You're totally right with this. So we'll see if it continues. Poor Texas, man. I just want to read one more thing, then I know we gotta go. One more thing. This is from the person who sponsored this bill. Republican State Representative Steve Toth writes, do we want to talk about the Holocaust? Yes. Do we want to talk about slavery? Yes. We will have to talk about all the evils of our past without blaming white children simply because of the color of their skin. Critical race theory says, I'm a white supremacist. Anyone that is not a person of color is a white supremacist. So basically, if everyone's a white supremacist, then no one is a white supremacist. That's so ridiculous. Oh God, okay, couple things on that really quick. He kind of got it at the end. Like, no one's saying you're a white supremacist. Well, I don't know, Steve, maybe you are. I haven't checked your Facebook, but no one's saying you are. No one's saying, but you're right that like no one actually is white supremacy. No one isn't white supremacy. White supremacy is everywhere. It's almost like it's a system. It's almost like it's not a person. You got it, buddy. You're almost there. But like, imagine going to the Holocaust and talking about the Holocaust and being like, okay, but now we can't blame the Nazis. Cause you know, look, we're not about blame. The Holocaust happened. No one's to blame. No one's pointing fingers. Like what?
It's like
world.
It's making the passive voice like your entire curriculum.
Yeah.
By whom? Like slavery occurred. By whom? Like you need, there needs to be a subject and an object for a sentence to be operative. Like there needs to be a subject and an object in like in the way that you describe historical events happening between groups with asymmetrical power. It's like, I mean, and I do think he's kind of showing his cards a little bit by assuming that white people are going to be the ones to be made to feel bad. Why do you think that, sir? Is that just a kind of implicit acknowledgement of the fact that white people in the US historically have been the perpetrators of racist policies, racist outcomes? Is white supremacy being upheld mainly by white people? I feel like he kind of knows that that's the case. And he's making, you know, sponsoring laws to protect the feelings of white children because he knows the truth. He knows it deep down. He just doesn't want other people to have to acknowledge it in school.
Yeah, that's the real crime. The real crime, again, is learning about racism. It's not the actual racism, just like homelessness. The real crime is having to see it, not that there are unhoused people. Perfect. This, see how this worldview works? Texas, I feel for you. My heart goes out to you. Do we have time for one more? We have time for the F block? All right, let's do this. I'm just gonna my way through this. You guys, you got the stepsister, okay? Might not be evil. CNN has finally taken a bold, brave step that they really should have done the day after hiring him and have fired Rick Santorum from its contract, from being a commentator with them, a senior political commentator somehow. See, got the title of senior. Over his comments made about Native Americans. On Saturday, a CNN senior executive told HuffPost that the network quietly ended its contract with Santorum this week. The executive who requested anonymity to speak openly said the decision to cut ties with Santorum came after he went on one of the network shows, Cuomo Primetime, to explain himself shortly after he made his racist comments. He blew it, said the executive, and after that, nobody at the network wanted to keep him around. You gotta wonder what he was doing to charm everyone before these comments.
After, was he Going back to the candy thing, was he supplying the whole office with like a luxurious selection of candies? Like, was he a very popular guy around there? Because I, you know, look, one thing that is an undeniable Native American contribution to American culture is getting Rick Santorum removed from CNN. And even Rick Santorum can't deny that. Even Rick Santorum can't deny that. There is one tangible, immediate, large contribution to American culture. But yeah, considering all the things he said about gay people, that didn't get him canned. Women, that hasn't gotten him canned. What he said about people on the left, leftists, progressives, none of that got him canned. I really have to say kudos to the Native American activists, organizers who got this accomplished, because they did what so many other groups couldn't accomplish, which is get Rick Santorum off the air. Mm. I just got to applaud them. Good job,
absolutely,
guys.
Absolutely. And let just a little bit more context on that. So this is thanks to indigenous led groups teaming up with several Hollywood celebrities for a day of action to pressure CNN to fire Santorum. They held a day long tweet storm with the hashtag #RemoveRick and a Twitter chat with Native journalists to talk about the impact of Native erasure in the media. They also circulated an open letter to CNN executives with more than 120 signatures from Native leaders, actors including Joaquin Phoenix, Ed Helms, Mark Ruffalo, Piper Perabo, and Sarah Silverman, educators and artists. So sometimes Twitter works out. Sometimes it comes for the right people, but of course, it'll be more cancel culture, as I say, clancel culture from the right. In reference to Aaron talking about all the other things he said and the fact that CNN hired him in 2017, you guys, this is after well-documented bigotry. But, and I wanna ask Aaron what she thinks about like why networks have to hire these kinds of people. But just going back, okay, so this is not the first racist stuff he said. On African Americans, he says, I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families. Oh my God, almost like they're children and you know better. He said on Social Security, he said it's the design is flawed, but having said that, the design will work a lot better if we had stable demographic trends. The reason Social Security is in big trouble is because we don't have enough workers to support the retirees. Well, a third of all young people in America aren't in America today because of abortion. It's because one in three pregnancies end in abortion.
First of all, he's half right. Demographic trends are saying that are not trends that could support Social Security as we know it. But here's one way to increase the number of workers. Let more immigrants in. Young immigrants who want to come to this country and work, we should be letting more of them in. We should be making it easier for people to become citizens. Also, one in three known pregnancies ends in abortion, but one in three known pregnancies that is wanted ends in a miscarriage. Like the body naturally decides. Also, the assumption that every single abortion would result in a child and all of the children that were born after an abortion would also have been born is ridiculous. Like a person who has an abortion at 18 probably wouldn't go on to have another child at age 32 because they had that kid at 18. You know, like
I didn't know where he was going with this, but then it when it ended in because abortion, you're like, right, there we go. It's like curtains close and scene. We know that was coming. And it's all been out there in the open. And I have a question, like, you know, CNN's hired Kayleigh McEnany, who then went on to be, you know, the press secretary, the last press secretary, the best press secretary, all right? Like the most North Korean propagandist press secretary for Donald Trump. But why? Like my question is, do you feel like CNN needs some sort of fill-in right-wing commentator? Because I feel like MSNBC has like Republicans who are Republican in like 2009. Mm-hmm. And CNN is Republicans who are Republican in like 2017, like 2016 or 2014 more. Like they were relevant then. Both I don't care about, just gonna lay that out there. But I'm wondering like, why do we even have to have someone like Rick Santorum on CNN?
I guess just like think about the people who watch cable news and the people who are that have it on all day. Like A couple weeks ago, I went on a cable news show and I got several text messages and emails from people over the age of 50 letting me know that they'd seen me on TV. I feel like the demographics that tend to watch TV specific news tend to be like a little bit older, and they kind of live in an age where they believe that bipartisanship, the illusion of bipartisanship, is still a thing. So I think that they believe that things are more balanced if they have Republicans on their TV, even though I don't see the value in trying to find balance between truth and untruth when one side is trying to be true-ish and the other side just has a complete disregard for facts. There is no middle ground for that. But
and especially when you consider how big the big tent party is, how broad Democrats are. There are many moderate Democrats, and you could easily have a robust discussion between moderate Democrats and actual progressives or leftists, right? Like, and that never happens. I'm fine with Republicans on CNN or MSNBC, but like make that their hour. Like be like, and now we listen to a Republican sound off about a dark lord who is dropping cues about when Trump will become president again. Like, right. Do that and then push back on them. Like, I'm fine with just having like a round table of ridiculous Republicans, but I'm not fine with like the constant like touchstone of, okay, but where is Santorum at so we know where like the rest of America is at? Get out of here.
Right.
All right, Aaron Ryan, that is all the time we have. Thank you for joining me on this fantastic Monday. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, even though that's not real life, at Morning Gloria. You can also find me on Instagram, where I just post cool TikToks that aren't history lessons. And you can find my writing on the Daily Beast.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. Be very well. Everyone listen to Hysteria Podcast as well. It's amazing.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.